Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Surrounded by your glory, one will my heart feel. Will I dance for you, Jesus, or in all of you be still? Will I stand in your presence, or to my knees will I fall?
You're listening to Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. When you think of Christian rock, conservative, well-polished fans, and bands like this one, Mercy Me, might be what comes to mind. But how about a band like this? Well, this group, Under Oath, is Christian rock, too. And the fans are not what you might expect, either. With their piercings, their tattoos, and, frankly, their potty mouths, it's getting harder to tell the Christian rockers from all the rest. Joining me now with an inside look into the new face of Christian rock is journalist Andrew Bojan. He spent a year investigating the phenomenon for a book called Body Piercing Saved My Life: Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. Andrew, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks so much for having me.
Andrew, I guess I have to start by asking why you thought a book about Christian rock would be a good idea in the first place. I understand a number of publishers, when you first pitched it, thought that this was something nobody was going to want to read.
Yeah, I think that's probably still an open question. I guess I thought it was a story. You know, there about 23% of the United States is evangelical, and there is a thriving Christian culture that's really underreported in mainstream media. And it seems like, you know, just from a strictly journalistic standpoint, there was a story there. Mm-hmm. And when I went out to the Cornerstone Festival in Illinois, saw 50,000 kids, you know, grooving in a cornfield to these different bands, I knew I was onto something.
All right. You got 50,000 kids in a cornfield. You got 23% of the country, considering itself to be evangelical in some form or another. Are those 50,000 kids part of that 23%, or is this a completely different subculture that we're talking about?
No. And it's not different. It just, I think, really reflects how multifaceted the character of evangelicalism in America is. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do church in the United States, and there's a lot of different ways to do Christian rock.
Mm-hmm. Now, 10 years ago, Christian rock was really kind of a niche market. What are the numbers like today?
Well, I mean, it's a billion-dollar industry at this point. Christian rock keeps gaining market share while other genres keep losing it, which suggests, anyway, that there are more and more consumers for it.
Mm-hmm. And so we have, you start the book with the Cornerstone Rock Festival, and you find Christian punks, alternative Christian rockers, even Christian goths.
Yeah, that was a big surprise to me, too.
Well, now, that's got to be a rather confused group of people, I would think.
Yeah, you would think so. But, I think that the one woman that I talked to was sort of like, you know, goths are very sensitive people. And she was saying that, you know, all this drama in the world, we have to respond to it in a certain way. I think it's also interesting because when people are teenagers, that's the point where when they pretty much realize they're going to die. And a lot of people become goths, a lot of people become Christians, and, you know, then there's that little-known third category.
Become Christians and goths. We're speaking with Andrew Bojan, who joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington on Soundcheck today. The book is called Body Piercing Saved My Life: Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. Just from the title alone, Andrew, it seems like, you know, that not only is the mainstream embracing Christian rock, but the reverse is true.
Yeah, definitely. The reason I chose that title is because it's a slogan on a T-shirt, and the back shows the Jesus's hands with holes in them. And I thought it was an excellent example of the way that Christian culture has embraced a lot of the symbols of mainstream rock culture, but imbued them with new meaning.
Mm-hmm. And certainly with new sounds as well.
Indeed.
You mentioned this guy from the band Pedro the Lion. Dave, is it Bazin? Bazan?
It's Bazan.
Bazan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where do you categorize this guy?
Well, I mean, it's funny. I never knew that he was a Christian because he's on a very respected indie label called Jade Tree Records.
Mm-hmm.
And but I guess you'd call him indie rock, you know, sort of slow core for real music geeks. But he sings in a very mournful tone. Mm-hmm. He has, you know, very drawn out tempos, nice guitar sound. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And swigging vodka from a bottle at a concert where there's a no alcohol policy.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Bazan is a really interesting cat. He grew up evangelical, and his dad was a minister, a music minister, in a Pentecostal church. And he's really reacted strongly to a lot of this stuff. He only does a couple of Christian events every year, and I think he almost goes to them as sort of a reverse evangelist. Like, he wants to introduce kids to the concept of doubt, which is something that's not a big thing in evangelical culture.
So I wonder what his dad makes of songs like this one, which is called Foregone Conclusions, from Dave Bazan and the band Pedro the Lion. Pedro the Lion, Foregone Conclusions, the name of the song. And speaking with author Andrew Bojan about his book, Body Piercing, Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. Pedro the Lion, you know, anybody who tuned in during the music and missed what came before, Andrew could just have assumed, as you said, that this was another indie rock band. He swears, he drinks. As you said, he's sort of bringing the real world, the outside world, into these Christian rock festivals and events. At what point does he become sort of indistinguishable as a Christian rocker from just the rest of the indie rock community?
From the rest of the indie rock community? Well, yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I don't think in the indie rock community very many people care about his personal beliefs, but it's life and death stuff within the Christian rock community. You know, there's all this chat on message boards about whether Christians should listen to Pedro the Lion as a result of some of the things that he does, the fact that he swears. You get the same thing with U2, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we actually did a whole segment about a week or so ago on whether U2 was Christian rock or just a bunch of guys who happened to be Christian and really rocked. You mention in your book that a lot of Christian rock radio stations will not play U2 songs if they're played by U2. They'll play other people's versions of them. So the songs are okay, the message is okay, but there's some suspicion about the members of the band.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things in Christian music that is always really important to remember. It's the messenger, you know, because you yourself have this relationship with God, and you exemplify that relationship by the way you comport yourself. So that's why you have, you know, artists like Michael English who are kind of cut out of Christian music because they faltered and you know, weren't apologetic about it.
Wow. That doesn't sound too Christian. I mean, at the end of the day, Andrew, what makes Christian rock Christian rock? Is there some kind of message, whether it's subliminal or explicit, that, you know, that is being, I don't know, sort of, you know, surreptitiously given to an unsuspecting audience? Is it as kind of, I don't know, that seems like a silly way to put it, but you know where I'm going here. What is it that...
Well, I mean, that's something that I think all Christian bands struggle with. Are we a Christian band? Are we Christians in a band? And it's something the industry has never fully settled either. There were torturous definitions being lobbied back and forth when Sixpence None the Richer had a mainstream hit with the song Kiss Me. And I think what it comes down to is that definition's kind of fading away. People aren't so much trying, as you played Under Oath at the beginning of this mm-hmm. segment. They're a band that goes back and forth between mainstream and Christian rock worlds with no problem whatsoever. They're headlining the Warped Tour this year. So, and if you ask them, they'll say, yeah, we're a Christian band, but you don't necessarily have to be Christian to listen to it. And I think that's the future.
Then there's the case of the band Evanescence, which sort of came out of, as I understand it, the Christian rock world, but, you know, sort of burst onto the pop music scene. And, mm-hmm. you know, there have been some bands that seem to have taken a step out of one camp and sort of, you know, moved into another consciously, making a decision to leave one and do the other.
Yeah, that's right. And Evanescence, in fact, committed sort of the ultimate way of showing that they were not on a Christian rock label anymore by swearing in an interview. What the F are we doing on a Christian chart?
Yeah. Now, when you did the interviews for this book, I mean, how difficult did you find it to penetrate the scene? How open were all the musicians and fans to you?
People were pretty open. You know, I didn't have a lot of trouble getting people like Steve Taylor, who's not only just a giant of Christian music, he was a really like formative early Christian rock artist, but also, you know, ran the label that signed Sixpence None the Richer and Chevelle to their first deal before they were an alternative rock band. But then there were also, you know, it was hard to get in touch with certain people through their publicists. But then if I sort of emailed them through their websites, I almost always got an answer.
Hmm.
Now it's very grassroots.
You interviewed the band Switchfoot, which is another one of these groups that seems to have kind of straddled or blurred the boundary between mm-hmm. rock and Christian rock. They seem to be upset by the whole term.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they didn't even want to admit that they were at a Christian rock festival when I interviewed them at one. They said that I think that these people are mostly spiritual seekers.
Hmm. Well, this is a song, Meant to Live, which gets a lot of radio play on mainstream commercial radio, but it comes from this alleged Christian rock band called Switchfoot. Switchfoot is the band, and we're speaking to Andrew Bojan, whose new book, just out, is called Body Piercing Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. Andrew, is it exclusively a Christian audience at these festivals? I mean, you know, bands like this certainly have a much wider appeal, and their sales figures show that they're reaching many people outside of that community.
It's definitely not exclusively Christian rock fans at Christian rock festivals, but it mostly is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it'll mostly be like friends coming along with youth groups kind of thing. But these bands also, you know, play secular festivals, for lack of a better term.
Right. Now, we often hear about religion in hip-hop, you know. It's kind of cool mm-hmm. these days to give Jesus a shout-out. But you don't hear of Christian rap so much. I mean, we're talking about Christian rock. Is there a whole spectrum of Christian
music? Oh, yeah.
Music?
Absolutely. There's Christian rap. And it was really funny. You know, I was seeing one Christian rap artist, and not necessarily like Kanye West, but just somebody, you know, playing in a just a club in Nashville where I was down for the Gospel Music Week. And I was watching this guy, and he was doing sort of everything that everyone says that they want in hip-hop. You know, it wasn't misogynist, he wasn't talking about selling records. In fact, he said he was a little embarrassed that he did have some stuff for sale in the back. But
he said it. He did say it.
Yeah. And, you know, there were maybe like 10 people there. Uh-huh. So I think people are lying about what they want out of hip-hop.
Yeah. But then, you know, Kanye West selling a gazillion records with a song like Jesus Walks. I mean, there's a very strong Christian imagery, if not message, in this song. So where do we put this?
Well, I mean, that was an interesting case because he actually got nominated for a, not Gospel Music Association Award, but a different gospel music association for that song. And the nomination was pulled because of the other content on the album.
Hmm.
So, you know, you can't really separate the one song from the rest of it.
Okay. So Jesus Walks, Kanye West, not enough to gain him entrance into the kingdom of Christian rockers and rappers.
Not as of yet.
Okay. An email here from Stephanie who writes, aren't these bands using Christianity as a means to build an audience, a stepping ladder? What do you think?
Some are. Some are just basically going about the business of being in a band the only way they know how. They're playing at their churches. That leads to bigger shows at festivals. Sometimes that leads to major label contracts, as which is what happened with Switchfoot. And, you know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that any more than I don't think that there's anything wrong with bands to start playing secular clubs and work their way up.
Right. I mean, and how many great R&B and soul singers got their start as gospel singers?
Indeed. I mean, you know, that is one really important point about Christianity and music. You know, the ties between rock and roll and Christianity go way back.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Andrew Bojan. His new book is called Body Piercing Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. So it's not a new idea, but there are new developments, it seems, because back in the 70s and 80s, when you talked about what was then known as CCM, Contemporary Christian Music, it was a pretty tepid group of bands that were out there at the time, at least the ones that we got a chance to hear from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was sort of this great mediocrity. A guy, Mark Allen Powell, who wrote a great book on called The Encyclopedia of Contemporary Christian Music, calls it all Christian mush. And it comes from sort of the desire to offend nobody, because there are so many different ways of being an evangelical in America that people are offended by all kinds of things, you know, by mentions of drinking, by smoking, by swearing. Some people even, and this is rare, but by using minor chords. So as a result, Christian music for a long time was really defined by timidity and caution. And that didn't really change until bands like DC Talk and Jars of Clay sort of started paving the way for quality music. Mm-hmm. And there was also Christian underground music developing around that same time.
Was there anything, I mean, there's always something. I mean, when you paint with that broad a brush, there are always little gaps that you don't quite cover. Was there some, I mean, for example, Larry Norman, would he have been an exception to the rule that it was all mush back then?
Oh yeah, he was definitely pre-mush days. He was an original Jesus freak. You know, the hippies who found Jesus and, you know, really got into this whole idea of this being the end of times, which I'm sure it probably seemed like in the 60s, and, you know, did this song, which also, I think, paved the way for the Left Behind books.
The song is I Wish We'd All Been Ready from Larry Norman.
There's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind. A man and wife asleep in bed. She hears a noise and turns her head. He's gone. I wish we'd all been ready. Two men walking up a hill. One disappears and one's left standing still. I wish we'd all been ready. There's no time to change your mind.
So that's Larry Norman and his kind of, I guess, this is basically a vision of the rapture, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, man. Acid rock about the apocalypse. You have got to love America.
I Wish We'd All Been Ready is the name of the song. We're speaking with Andrew Bojan about the phenomenon that is Christian rock. You've used the word evangelical a couple of times. How evangelical are these bands? Are they trying to get political points of view across, for example?
Very rarely. Only some bands do political stuff. And, you know, I should really state that the people that I met when I was doing this book were really all over the map politically. They weren't all about, you know, banning gay marriage and stuff like that. Though there are bands that, you know, do sing about that. Hawk Nelson, one band on Tooth and Nail, has a chorus of a song that equates gay marriage with a bunch of, you know, property crimes. Yeah, there's political stuff, but there's mostly just people trying to make music.
Mm-hmm.
And not to sound too dippy about it.
Right, right. Now, what about, you say there the people that you met were kind of all over the map politically. How about socially, culturally? I mean, is it largely a young white crowd? Is it mostly male? How does that break down?
Well, it's really interesting. At the festivals, it's very much of a young crowd. You rarely see anyone over 30. If you do, they're generally a youth pastor. But the people making it, yeah, they're it's like anywhere else in music. It's white guys in their 30s, pretty much.
Yeah. What about we were hearing Larry Norman before. He's kind of estranged from the whole Christian rock movement, right?
Yeah, and he was a founder of it all. You know, he started one of the first Christian rock labels. He signed some of the early giants of the music, Keith Green, people like that. And I guess at some point he just kind of didn't want anything more to do with what was becoming an industry. You know, people realized that, you know, one of the things about America is people make these big life changes and then they need to buy new stuff to go along with it. So Christian rock really quickly became a lifestyle accessory. And I don't think that Larry Norman was very comfortable with that. You know, he saw it as a ministry and a way to reach people.
So for a lot of the kids who are at these concerts, is this, you know, is this their, an iPod for them? Is it a status symbol, a kind of, you know, a badge of membership in a club?
It's definitely that. It's also like a way for many kids who grow up in evangelical families aren't able to, you know, consume rock in the way that kids who aren't Christians do. So this is really a chance for them to get henna tattoos and go kind of nuts and commune with people. And those festivals, I should add, are very safe.
Yeah.
The vendors leave all their stuff on the tables at night.
Andrew, it sounds like in the course of writing the book that you found yourself liking these folks and the music as well.
I'd say I like about the same percentage as I do when I'm covering, you know, regular music, which is, you know, a couple bands every year.
Okay. We've been speaking with Andrew Beaujean. His book is called Body Piercing Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. He joined us from the NPR studios in Washington. Andrew, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
A little bit of music from Mute Math to wrap up this part of the program. What do you think? We'd like to hear from you. You can email us. Our email address, as always, soundcheck@wnyc.org. In a moment, violinist Anna Kiko Myers talks about her role in Rewind, a concert that spans five centuries of music, going backwards, presumably. Plus, why you may never get to see TV shows like The Wonder Years or Beverly Hills 90210 on DVD. It's all about the music. This is Soundcheck.